This month on Tape Relay, the next instalment of Alistair Fitchett's Unpopular Tangent series continues a look into his young and foolish past. We're crossing the Atlantic from Alistair's home in the UK and checking out some American bands that you devoted an entire chapter to in your book, Alistair.
I did, yeah. The American thing was quite strange. It would have been the early-ish to mid-90s, I guess, when I was starting to write about those sorts of groups and listening to those groups. I'd had, I guess in some respects, a sort of a difficult relationship with American music up until that point. Certainly, the whole grunge thing really passed me by, but I didn't really engage with that a great deal. I mean, I liked bands like Galaxy 500 and Pixies I quite liked, and Throwing Muses I liked, but the heavier groups, the noisier groups, really didn't do a great deal for me. So the American thing, when I started to listen to a few things in that early 90s, I guess there was some connections to that sort of grunge thing, but for me it was maybe the bands that had some bit more melody going on, a bit more tune.
It is interesting because you mentioned bands like the Pixies and Galaxy 500, but they seem to have sort of existed almost like on their own at the time. And one of the things that I picked up when I was listening to the songs that you've chosen for the Unpopular Tangent segment tonight is that there's this sort of common thread running through the bands, one of them being this sense of angular indie rock, which fits very much within that mid-90s framework that was happening, especially in the Pacific Northwestern states like Oregon and Washington. And I'm thinking that kind of music really appealed to you and why you've sort of chosen these four bands in particular.
I think that's right. I think that what you're saying about that sort of angular sort of feel, I think is spot on. And I think that probably appealed to me in terms of the sort of music that from the UK that I'd been listening to in the 80s, groups like Laugh, for example, that we talked about a little while back, and even groups like maybe Big Flame, for example, who had that very jaggy, angular, disjointed, fractured sort of sound, which I really liked. So yeah, there's very much that sense of a similar kind of aesthetic, but with a North American bent to it.
The first band that we'll hear tonight, Nothing Painted Blue, who were from Los Angeles and rather hyper-literate, in fact, with the band name taken from a line in an Anne Margaret movie.
Yes, I think that literate thing is something that's important. That sense of intelligence, the fact that they were very intelligent songs and they were clearly very smart people that were making the music and not afraid, not ashamed of their intelligence. Sometimes it's, you know, one of the things that irritates me is that I think it feels particularly in the UK there's this sense that there's a kind of an embarrassment behind being, oh, I'm going to sound, possibly a bit, I don't know, a bit dodgy here, but a kind of embarrassment of being middle class, white and educated, and that in order to be taken seriously you kind of have to pretend to be stupid. And that's something that I've always been really, it's always really irritated me in terms of the pop music, certainly in the UK.
They were led by songwriter Franklin Bruno, who actually had a degree in mathematics and was sort of quite a... They did have a few references to mathematical things and, like you said, weren't afraid of their intellectual qualities, I guess. But musically, though, they sounded not unlike Guided by Voices or even Pavement, but never quite achieved the same sort of recognition as those bands.
Do you know, I sometimes wonder if the reason they didn't was because of that intelligence thing, and maybe because they just didn't have as much of the kind of accepted rock and roll image as a group like, you know, Guided by Voices or Pavement would have had.
How did you come into hearing the band?
For me, it's a story of record shops. There used to be a terrific little independent record shop in Exeter when I first moved here called Binary Star. And they had sort of three or four people that, you know, running the shop, and they had a huge range of different sorts of music, and they had a big box of 7-inch singles. And so it became a bit of a joke that I was kind of like the only person that bought the 7-inch singles, so I'd be, you know, raking through these boxes of 7-inches. And there would occasionally be these singles from the States, the Simple Machines record stuff and the Cocoa Pop label things. And that was pretty much where I picked up on them. You know, I found these records in the box and thought, oh, look, that looks interesting. And then they would give it a spin in the record shop, and that was terrific. And it was the same store that they had this American indie stuff. They had, obviously, you know, British independent stuff, guitar stuff, you know, indie pop, all that sort of stuff. But they also had dance records. They had techno, drum and bass. And there was a chap in there who, Mike, lovely bloke, but then he was really into his drum and bass and techno stuff. but he'd also knew about and quite liked a lot of the guitar music. So you'd go in there and there was a real range, eclectic mix of things going on. And you could pick up lots of different things from lots of different sorts of genres and styles. And that was fine. That was cool. Everybody was cool with that. And then, you know, several years later, the store closed. And now, in the shop next door, there's now a specialist dance record shop. And you go in there and that's all you hear. And that's all you can buy. And it seemed to me that that's a real shame that the music styles has become so compartmentalized that it's almost like you can only like one kind of music. And I really miss that sense of the fact that, you know, you go into a record shop and you could hear lots of different things. It now seems to me you go in there and that you only hear one style of thing. So that's kind of where the Binary Star Records store in Exeter was where I picked up on all this stuff, really.
From the 1993 album Power Trips Down Lover's Lane, this is Nothing Painted Blue and the song White Bicycles.
Just suppose you suddenly found yourself producing phonograph records. You, as the entrepreneur, have brought together the productive resources of land, labor, and capital to produce a record. Now, what record will you produce?
First up in that set, we heard from Nothing Painted Blue from the record Power Trips Down Lover's Lane, released on the record label Coco Pop. The song was called White Bicycles. And just then, the Spinanes from their first album, Manos, and the track Spitfire. And Alistair, I've got to say, I've never been really convinced on the Spinanes because I've always sort of loved maybe like one or two songs from them, but not an entire album. And this is the new best song from the Spinanes that I've heard.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that that's had a positive impact on you. I think that Spitfire was the first time that I'd heard Spinanes. And again, it was picked up the record in the record shop, and it was on yellow vinyl, I think, and it was on Sub Pop. And I was a bit dubious about Sub Pop because they were the grunge label, supposedly. But I thought, check it out. And it was just that sort of rifle retort drums, that really sharp, crisp drum sound that sort of kicks in. And as soon as I heard that, I was just totally taken by it. And then they had the Manos album on Sub Pop, which had that single on, which I thought was terrific.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I liked this song in particular that we heard was it does sound like Spitfire. It has that sort of real energy about it, which I think they kind of lost by the time I got around to listening to them on the album Arches and Isles. It was a bit more mellow.
Ah, okay, right. Yeah, because I did pick up, it might have been the only, but certainly the first solo Rebecca Gates album some years ago, and that is much more mellow than the Spinanes stuff. I do like Rebecca Gates' voice. It has got that sort of melancholic, quite sort of sad feel to it, and I think it may well suit that more laid-back style. But yeah, the fact that Spitfire, it does sound exactly like it ought to sound, a song called Spitfire ought to sound, doesn't it? It really does sort of, well, it literally like spits fire at you, so terrific stuff.
Another common thread that I found in this month's bands, such as the Spinanes, led by Rebecca Gates, and the band they're about to hear next, Tsunami, is the presence of a really strong female front person with these kind of almost meatier sounding voices. But yeah, Tsunami. Now, I'd sort of heard about Jenny Toomey for a while, but I never actually heard any of her musical output, so I'm kind of glad that you chose something from this band.
Okay, yeah. Now, Tsunami, I'm trying to think how I got into Tsunami. Now, I think it would have been, again, picking up the 7-inch single in the record store, and it would have been the time when they were doing the Simple Machines Holiday series, the Working Holiday it was, the ones that split single a month. And one of the first ones I picked up, actually, must have been near the end of that year, was the one that was split between Tsunami and Small Factory. I think that might well have been, it's probably very untrendy to say this, but it was probably the first time that I heard both of those groups. So I wasn't really aware of the Simple Machines label until I picked up those sorts of singles. But the Tsunami track, I really did love the voices, as you've mentioned there. And they had that sort of marriage between their voices and the quite chunky guitar, powerful noise going on there was really good. And then from there, I started then sort of tracking back and picked up the Deep End album and started finding out more about the Simple Machines label. And the Simple Machines label, actually, which the Tsunami people were pretty much in charge of, was a big influence on me in terms of actually starting a label myself. They put a little booklet back in the 90s which was all about how to start a record label.
I think that's actually how I came across Jenny Toomey originally.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from sort of reading about these DIY, run-your-own record labels sort of thing, and I think a lot of that also, had me inspired as well. So to just a brief history on Tsunami, there were a band formed in Arlington, Virginia, which is on the sort of southeastern coast, formed by housemates Jenny Toomey and Kristen Thompson in late 1990. And as Alistair has mentioned, Jenny also ran the Simple Machines record label, from which Tsunami would release the majority of their music on. But you've actually chosen to play a song, not actually from one of their albums, but from the Working Holiday compilation that was brought out by Simple Machines.
Yeah, this is the first time that I'd heard Tsunami. And still, I think partly because it was the first song that I heard by them, it's still one of my favourite Tsunami moments. And of course, all the Working Holiday tracks were collected on CD as well. And as an introduction to sort of Simple Machines songs and records that Simple Machines are putting out, it's absolutely wonderful.
From the Simple Machines Working Holiday compilation, as mentioned, this is Tsunami and a track, Kidding on the Square.
Just up to the ceiling, you smell like guess it must be true.
Speaking to Alistair Fitchett as part of the Unpopular Tangent series, part two of our Young and Foolish look into Alistair's world. And we've just heard a song from Tsunami off the Simple Machines Working Holiday compilation, Kidding on the Square was the track. And now to Tara Jane O'Neill, who was in bands like Retson and the Sonora Pine, but then branched out solo. And from her album Peregrine, we're going to hear a song from that.
The first time I was aware of Tara Jane O'Neill was with Rodin, who I saw when Tsunami toured in the UK, maybe 94, 95, something like that. It was Tsunami, Eggs, and Rodin. And Rodin just completely blew my mind. I was just absolutely astonished by them. They were just incredibly loud. And just amazing mixture of noise, fractured noise, but with strange sort of melodic threads coming through. A lot of people, I guess, maybe have some sort of impression that I don't really like loud rock music, and to some extent that's true. Lots of loud rock music I definitely shy away from. And I think they're always amazed when I say I really loved Rodin. But Rodin were just absolutely astonishing. And I remember I'd been to see that tour at Cambridge show. It was a beautiful summer evening, really, really warm. And we were sat outside there with Jenny Toomey and Tara. And we were having a conversation about various things. And, you know, as you do, you sort of talking about, your favourite albums of all time. And I was expecting Tara to say something sort of loud and rocky and noisy. And she said, you know, almost without hesitation, Joni Mitchell's Blue. And I was totally shocked. And partly because I'd been listening to Joni Mitchell's Blue album around about the same time and really, really loving it. So we started having this conversation about the Joni Mitchell album. And that really surprised me, the fact that, you know, somebody who was a member of such a loud group was into such, I guess, you know, sort of singer-songwriter acoustic music. So I have to admit, I didn't follow Tara's career too much after the Rodin stuff. So the Rets and things and Sonora Pine, I still haven't really investigated too much. But then when she started doing solo albums, I started picking up on that. And then suddenly it seemed to me, and probably it's probably true from the Sonora Pine and Rets and albums, but with the solo stuff, suddenly that whole Joni Mitchell singer-songwriter thing all made sense and it all seemed to fit. And I really do love all those solo records that she's done. Have you seen that film Half Cocked?
No, but I believe she's in it, right?
Yeah, there's this movie Half Cocked, which was made in 1985, I think it would have been. So that would have been about the time that I saw the Rodin Tsunami Eggs tour, I guess, then. And it basically stars Rodin, sort of fictional band, and it's very much almost sort of fly on the wall, mock documentary type thing about struggling rock band in the States, and they just look terrific. And there's Jeff Mueller and Jason Noble from the group, and of course they went on to Tune of 44, again more of that noisy, fractured kind of sound. And Tara Jane O'Neill just is terrific in that movie, because she must be young, she must be only about, well, I guess 17, 18 at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And looks completely cool in that sort of slacker, slightly grunge kind of feel. It's a great sort of record of that era of Americana music. It's all black and white and lots of sort of grainy shots of rundown environments, rundown neighborhoods, just the whole scene of touring around in a van and being poor, young, poor, but, you know, but really sort of passionate about music comes across really well. So if you can track it down, it's a terrific movie to watch.
From the album Peregrine, we're going to end the Unpopular Tangents series for this month with a track from Tara Jane O'Neill and the song Sunday Song.